and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the second hour of the show. It is six after the hour. I hope the weather's great where you are. The phone number, if you want to be on the show, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. So there is a song that is suddenly going viral across the internet. You might have heard it.
Got blood on my hands.
So the song was written after the songwriter witnessed the botched withdrawal from Afghanistan. It's not just any songwriter. It's John Androsik of Five for Fighting, and he joins me by phone. How are you?
I'm great, Eric. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You know, we were talking in break. The number of people circulating this, the number of videos you can see online using this in montage and stuff, and not a word of it in social media right now, and yet it has certainly captured the minds and hearts of people as people are responding to seeing this withdrawal from Afghanistan. And I obviously realize that's the precipitating event for you putting this song together, but it just, I would love to just pick your brain on the images and the visuals that come to your mind that lead you to do this.
Well, certainly like all of us, you know, when the initial images started coming out of Afghanistan with the people falling from airplanes and women throwing their children over walls, I think for me, it kind of harkened back to 9/11, just kind of stunned and shocked and outraged. But I really didn't start writing the song until after we evacuated. I got a song from a friend. And she said, "Hey, I need some information. Can you connect me with someone?" And I said, "Sure, what's going on?" And she said, "Oh, I'm working on evacuating AMSIPs from Afghanistan." And, you know, me being just kind of an ignorant songwriter, I'm like, "What's an AMSIP?" She said, "American citizen." And there was silence on the line. And I said, "Are you telling me that Americans are risking their own lives to go rescue our people that we left behind?" And she started crying. And this is a toughie. And the clarity really came to me. And finally, when President Biden came out with his extraordinary success speech, I was insulted, like we all were. And, you know, to be honest, Eric, I spent my whole life supporting the military. And I have great respect for the military. And I hoped that Generals Milley and Austin would come out and clarify that. But they didn't. They came out and parroted the same extraordinary success line. And that scared me. Because I always expected our generals to be the adults in the room, and that has ramifications for generations. So the lack of accountability kind of wrote the last few lines, and I had no intention of writing this song. Frankly, I take no joy in it, but I felt somebody had to say it.
And, you know, so let's step back here just a little bit, because, I started listening to you a number of your songs. Just they became the soundtrack for a point in my life. With Five for Fighting. And now I told you the other day, I thought it was just fascinating to me. I loved it that my kid, who's a diehard Taylor Swift fan, was actually in her room and had some of your songs on like deep cut albums, not even the more popular stuff. And
wow.
which was great for me. And I just, I guess, how's it like for you being someone who is not of the progressive vanguard, being in music, the response, not just the response, but also the falling off the radar of people in the media when you do stuff like this, that if you had done it about Trump, you know, would have gone viral.
You know, it's a little lonely, but I'm not, you know, I think one thing I found is, you know, I'm not, there's a lot of folks in the industry that silently, believe similarly to me. And I'm not a political person per se. I've never written political songs. I'm kind of an orphan in the middle, you know, like you, I wasn't a big Trumper. And as I said, yes, if Donald Trump was president, I'd write the same song and I'm sure I'd be the toast of the town, but this is too important to me. This is a moral issue. It is not a political issue. It is a moral issue. We, America's promise matters. Joe Biden looked us in the eye and said, "I will not leave Americans behind." He did. There's no accountability. And I don't care who president is. That has ramifications for our country. No Man Left Behind matters. And if we don't have accountability, we cannot atone for this. We first have to admit our complicity. I have a friend on the ground, the woman that I talked to that inspired the song. I talk to her every day. The Taliban burned down a music school. The children, the women, 13 to 18 in that school, are now in a safe house trying to get out. We hear about atrocities every day. The media wants to move on, but I'm not going to let them because this is too important. It's happening. It's on us. And we have to do everything we can to help those people that we promised to protect. And we are not. So I'm angry. And I hope other musicians pick up on this message because it has to be said and we can't move on.
Now, along those lines, you've got a long history of supporting the U.S. military and performing for the USO. I know you talk to people out there, and I do too. Having grown up in the Middle East, I have a lot of friends in the military over the years, and I can't really find anyone willing to defend this outside of the president or the very upper ranks of the military.
I have gotten, I wouldn't say 1,000, but hundreds of emails, many from our troops, military families, veterans. They all say the same thing. Thank you for saying this. Thank you for saying what we're all feeling, because they feel dishonored. This really is a matter of honor. And 99.9% of our military, our soldiers, they have honor. But our leaders, General Milley does not. And I think we're seeing even more of that in the last few days, in the last week or so. So we have to call them to account. And this is more important for our military members than anybody. They are the ones suffering. They are the ones who sacrificed in Afghanistan. And they are the ones who are angry, very angry, because it's so personal to them. So you're right. I haven't talked to anyone who said, yeah, what a great airlift. They are angry. And I think we owe it to them to keep this message going and just to have accountability with our leaders. They have to resign. Nobody's resigned or been fired. So what happens the next time? What happens in Taiwan? What happens to Ukraine? Are we going to have another extraordinary success that has much more ramifications? I mean, I'm sure I'm saying what you're saying, but we got to keep saying it.
Yeah, you mentioned Taiwan, and that's kind of my big concern now. You've got this financial crisis in China right now. One of their largest companies, a real estate company, people have paid deposits for houses. The houses not only aren't going to be built, the company's going under. The company forced their own employees to give the company loans. They can't pay those back. And I'm worried President Xi is like, hey, we need a distraction, and it could very easily now be Taiwan, and we've signaled that we're not going to do anything.
I think you're right. I think if I'm one of our enemies, whether it's China, Russia, Iran, I look at this and go, well, there may not be a better time because these folks left their own people in Afghanistan to a terrorist state. The State Department still blocking efforts to help our allies. And if they're going to leave them behind, who says they're going to go put a big military effort if we go after Taiwan? I think it's an incredibly dangerous time. And that's why I think it's so important that the members of Congress have some accountability. I think if our enemies see that we are addressing this and there is consequences, they may be a little more hesitant to move. But so far, we haven't seen that. I'm hopeful, when General Milley comes up in a few days, that they go after him and call him to account. But it's up to the president. It's up to the president. And so far, General Milley, the guy who basically said it's all good, is in high regard by our president, and that's dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's well said. Now listen, I can't let you go without asking you a little bit more just about you and on tour. And, I mean, do you have a new album coming out, and are you on tour right now?
Well, tonight we are on our first gig, on our first date since the pandemic, and we're very excited. I'm standing in my hotel in Cincinnati looking at a Grater's ice cream, which I'm sure will hit at some point. And, we're going to be in Ohio this week. We're going to be on the East Coast. We're going to be in New York City. We're going to be in D.C. this Sunday, and I'm sure that'll be very interesting. And hopefully we'll get down south to see you guys before the end of the year. But, again, I appreciate you spreading the word, and I appreciate all your listeners. The biggest thing we can do, because the mainstream media does not want to play the song, is to have a grassroots effort. So, go to YouTube, Blood on My Hands, and YouTube, share it, watch it, give it to your friends. And at some point, they'll have to recognize us, and we will, I think, move the needle.
Well, if you get through Atlanta, I will come see you. If I come see you out on the West Coast, if you still got your 65 Mustang, my son's going to want to come drive it. He's only 13. He can't drive, but he's going to want, he's become this car nut. I don't understand how.
Well, we can take it out in the cul-de-sac and do a little drive, can't we?
John, listen, best of luck to you. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks so much, Eric. Take care.
You too. Now, for those of you who are like, John Androsik, I know him. He sounds familiar. Y'all know John. I'm actually a big fan of his, and so it was exciting for me to talk to him. You've heard the song that put him on the map, and he was a singer before this one, but this one really took off. Y'all know it. So, interestingly enough, John Androsik as he sings, his group is called Five for Fighting. It's him. He's not a solo artist, but it really is him. Phenomenal songwriter, and that song made it on the show Dawson's Creek. And then 9/11 happens, and it kind of became the anthem for 9/11. He had so many great songs, and now he's become this massive supporter of the military and just was inspired to write this new song, Blood on My Hands, after seeing the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, having people left behind, he himself trying individually as a songwriter to help people get out of Afghanistan. And the song has exploded, by the way. If you go to Apple Music or other music, as you can see, it's chart. It is like making it up the charts for online music streaming, and yet you're not getting any coverage out of the mainstream media of this song because it's very critical of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, which is kind of eye-opening for him. He's not a diehard conservative Republican. He certainly leans right, and that's never been a problem until a moment like this where you really do see how the media – trying to not just control a narrative, but move on from an unpopular storyline that's hurting Joe Biden, doesn't want to cover a situation like this. And ask yourself, to his point, if Trump had done this and he'd put the song out, because I know him well enough to know he would have done this if Trump were president and did the same thing. What would the media response have been in that situation? And there you can see how the media tries to avoid anything that might hurt the Democrats. There is even more breaking news happening right now. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-973-7425. House Democrats have just announced after a recess of the Rules Committee, they are going to remove $1 billion from the continuing resolution package that was going to help Israel cover the cost of the Iron Dome missile defense system that protects them from Hamas terrorist attacks. House progressives said they would not vote for the continuing resolution if the money was left in the continuing resolution. The House Democrats are caving to the progressive wing of the Democratic Party to support Hamas's right to launch missiles into Israel. Fascinating. Absolutely, absolutely fascinating. This is going to be a problem for the Democrats, but you should understand the dynamics here, and I want to spend a little more time on this when we come back. It's not going to pass. The continuing resolution is dead anyway. So they can go through performance and placate the progressive wing because they don't have Republican votes anyway, and the Republicans are going to block into the Senate. So it's dead anyway. It doesn't matter. But you see through this who the progressives are. They want to help Hamas terrorists and not Israeli citizens. Pathetic. Y'all, you know, related to this, and I mentioned this a little bit yesterday, but gosh, I put it up on Twitter. There have been so much of a deep dive on this with the rise of secular progressivism, a post-Christian United States. I'm actually really fascinated by this. I mentioned offhandedly that it seemed there has been a rise in you can say, I mean, it is idol worship, but in astrology, in crystals, in New Age spiritualism. And a buddy of mine sent me an article because I just said it seems, but he sent me an article and said, yes, it actually is. The number of people who are buying crystals and embracing astrology is skyrocketing in this country. And I am genuinely fascinated by the trend of what is actually very old religions being repackaged as New Age spiritualism and coming back in an increasingly pagan society. I'm floored by it. And yet in this country, there are a massive number of people who are now embracing spiritualism, rejecting traditional organized religion, particularly Christianity, for however a God who makes them feel good, and actually as expressed in crystals. Now, a buddy of mine, Joe, who listens, he's a friend of mine from my Red State days, listens in Louisiana. He said, you should go explore a particular channel on Reddit. I don't want to tell you the channel, because I don't want you to go there. I steeled myself in preparation. Oh my gosh, the number of people in this country trying to dabble in witchcraft is nuts. I bet you could put it on a graph and correlate it. Not necessarily causation correlation issue here, but the number of people who are suffering mental health issues and all sorts of anxiety issues and the like, people who are dabbling in these sorts of things, it really is insane to me how many people are embracing this sort of old paganism repackaged as some sort of New Age spiritualism. But the idea that somehow some sort of magic crystals or some such are going to do something for you. I actually, what was it now? Forget the details. I was mentioning this yesterday. Oh, somebody forgetting to put their crystals outside during the full moon to recharge them. This is happening with otherwise like college educated people. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez apparently has been very open about she believes her horoscope. The reading of the stars to tell her what her life is going to be like. And you have college educated. Now, of course, it's liberal arts. It's not actually like engineers and stuff, but they're buying crystals to guard their spirit, to shape their spirit. They're laying crystals on themselves. I mean, but let's be honest, and I don't want to upset you or offend you, but you kind of see this with the essential oil stuff too. Not supposed to say that, because, man, that is rampant in the church. The number of people looking for alternative medicine stuff in the church, they're going for the essential oils to cure their cancer and stuff. I run into this at evangelical fundamentalist churches all the time. It is people, I mean, God gives you all of these great things, and instead you're going to say, "Nah, that's all right, God, I'm going to go over here to the magic crystal in the eucalyptus essential oil, and that's going to cure my psoriasis." It's happening. I realize I have just offended a large segment of my audience, but it's happening, and I should call your attention to it, because we don't just cover the news here, but the cultural trends of the day, and you can call it neo-paganism for sure, is run amok in this country with the crystals and the horoscopes and the crystals dipped in the essential oil and who knows what else. We're going back to foraging as well. It is this granola strain that's out there right now. If everybody has their chicken coop now, because they're skeptical of GMOs, you got your chicken coop in your garden, which, you know, if a war comes, those are going to be the people who survive. Let's just be honest here. We're all going to be raiding their houses for their chicken, but they're only doing it for the eggs. Very few of them have gotten into butchering yet. That's the next step. I got a buddy of mine who decided to teach himself butchering skills because he wanted to hunt. And if he hunted, he wanted to learn to butcher. So he went to a butchering school for a summer and learned how to butcher and now hunts. And it just, nope, I'll just go to the grocery store, Omaha Steaks. Welcome back. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number, if you want to be on the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. There's a story. It is in a, it's now gone national, but it started Fox 5 out of Atlanta about Adam Francois Watkins. He's a lawyer. He's a Jeopardy winner. They left that out of the story. I recognize the name. He was a Jeopardy winner. He's also a lawyer in Atlanta. He and his wife, Louise, and their three kids are ready for the kids to get the COVID vaccine. They're 9, 11, and 13. So two of them are under the age, and they are ready for it. They're excited by the news that Pfizer-BioNTech pediatric vaccine appears to be safe and effective for children as young as five. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration still has to review the data and make a decision as to whether or not to authorize the vaccine. But they plan to get their two younger children vaccinated as soon as possible, hopefully by the end of next month, if they do it. Pediatrician Dr. Jennifer Hsu with Children's Medical Group in Atlanta says she's hopeful of the FDA and that they will authorize the vaccine for kids 5 to 11 by the end of next month, just in time for the winter flu and respiratory virus season. Lots of parents excited by this, but I bet you're not. What I expect we're going to have happen is a massive wave of media campaigning for you to do this for your kids. And I got to put this in proper context for you. I think if the FDA says that the Pfizer vaccine is safe for kids 5 to 11, and you want to give your kids the vaccine, go for it. It's your choice as a parent to vaccinate your children. If the FDA says that the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is safe for children and you choose not to get your child vaccinated, go for it. It's your choice. They're your children. My suspicion is we are about to, because I do think the FDA is on the verge of doing this, and I think we are going to be rapidly on the verge of an entire media campaign designed to shame parents for not getting their children vaccinated with the COVID vaccine. We now know that COVID is seasonal. There's a headline out of Atlanta, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, that COVID is rapidly declining in public schools in the Atlanta area, but it's not just there. Throughout the Southeast United States, and elsewhere in the South, COVID cases are sharply declining. School districts across Metro Atlanta are almost all reporting a sharp decline in COVID-19 cases compared to numbers reached in the third and fourth weeks of August. In the latest data reports, 13 area school districts recorded 3,119 cases for the week ending September 17th. That's a significant drop from the nearly 6,000 cases recorded the last week of August. The school district numbers mirror data from the Georgia Department of Public Health reporting about the state's younger population. Notably, this trend is spread across the South. Florida school districts, Texas school districts, Louisiana school districts, Mississippi school districts, Alabama school districts, they're all seeing the same thing. Again, COVID is seasonal. It is fading in the South as we spend more time outdoors. It is increasing in the North as they spend more time indoors. This was predictable based on the pattern at the end of last year that it's here now. It is seasonal. It is also now rapidly moving to be endemic. Now, a pandemic is a widespread disease that hits the whole world at a time. An endemic is a disease regularly found among particular people or in certain areas. And it is rapidly becoming a endemic regular situation spread in certain regions of the country at certain times of the year. And we can no longer act like it's not. We can't act like we're going to beat it. We can't act like it's going to go away. And it is past time for people to stop freaking out about it. And yet, the left is completely, constantly freaked out about it. Now, I mentioned that there is a new rise to spiritualism in this country, a neo-paganism that has creeped into this country. More and more people are buying crystals. More and more people are buying astrology books. More and more people are dabbling in witchcraft. It's actually documented. It's happening. The trend lines are up. There's also a social anxiety in this country that's increasing, and a social anxiety that is to some degree related to COVID, and it happens to be with the post-Christian neo-pagan subset of people on the left and the secularists who are most likely to see that. And now there's data on this. Let me read you this finding. Brad Wilcox of the Institute for Family Studies highlights it. Republicans and conservatives reported less distress than Democrats and liberals. The most obvious explanation for this pattern is the politicization of the pandemic and the fact that Republicans and conservatives simply were not as concerned about the pandemic and less likely to think they needed to worry about social distancing and so on. In fact, evangelicals are much more likely to be Republicans and conservatives, and politics almost completely explains why evangelicals experienced less distress during the early stages of the pandemic. Before accounting for politics, evangelicals tend to go to church and have stronger faith. Churchgoers, more than any political group, churchgoers tend to have less anxiety and stress about this pandemic. Now, this is not a situation, and you should not interpret it as a situation of people deciding that Jesus is going to save me so I don't have to worry about the pandemic. Those people exist. I've encountered those people. I'm not going to get the vaccine and the virus isn't going to touch me because Jesus Christ is my savior and he'll protect me. Oh, just wait 1 minute. I got to go take my insulin shot and take my heart medicine. Why are you taking insulin and heart medicine? Is it Jesus going to save you from those things too? People are stupid. They have irrational thoughts in their head, irrational conflicting thoughts. But, people who regularly go to church tend to overall have less anxiety in their lives. They tend to roll with the punches better. They tend to realize we live in a fallen world where bad things happen and we shouldn't be freaked out about it. We should just continue going about our business and exercising reasonable precautions as we should and could and can and will. It is the progressives who are totally freaked out. This is the only world they have hope in, the only world they have faith in. And when a global pandemic comes along, they tend to freak out. There was a video that circulated, I think it was yesterday, of a guy on his plane. He had his cell phone out. There were two older people next to him. He was on a plane, had taken his mask off on the plane to eat. And the woman next to him absolutely freaked out, had a total meltdown, was essentially trying to crawl out of her seat into her husband's lap. They were wearing face masks and face shields, face masks and face shields over the masks. And here's the guy sitting next to them who has taken off his mask to eat something on the plane, which is permissible under the rules. And the woman in particular, but also the man, they've completely melted down, freaked out. Now, I will tell you, if it were me and I were sitting next to someone who is that completely freaked out, instead of recording it and putting it on the internet so people could laugh at those people, I would say I'm sorry and put my mask back on because I do try to be friendly and a good neighbor and inobtrusive, and I don't want to rock the boat with people who I'm spending several hours on a plane with. Your mileage may vary. No judgment on you doing otherwise. No judgment on me for doing that. It's just not my style when I'm clearly making people hyper uncomfortable sitting next to me to continue making them hyper uncomfortable. But also, at the same time, it is worth noting that their reaction was overblown, overtop, and nuts. People who lack faith in a higher power tend to put their faith in themselves and what they can control. And they tend to think that so much can be controlled. When there are things that cannot be controlled, they tend to lash out even more. If you're someone of faith, you realize that there are things that can't be controlled, but God's got a plan for everything, so you don't freak out. And we're seeing this remarkably in the data right now on anxiety related to COVID, on people's willingness to or to not get the vaccine, to rush into getting the vaccine, to their navigation through the virus, all of these things. If you want to get a vaccine for your kids, it's your right. If you don't want to get a vaccine for your kids, it's your right. The problem is that the people who want you to get the vaccine for your kids, who are of the left, don't think it's your right, but your obligation and duty, and they want to force you to do it. Now, there are certain situations over time where we have required vaccines for kids to go to school. In fact, I've got to take my daughter to the doctor to get her updated shot record this afternoon for school. In a private Christian school, you still have to have the MMR and things like that. And I get it. And those vaccines have been tested over time. They're not new. They're long served, and they do her a lot of good to have them in her system. We got both of our kids vaccinated. They're both 12 and up. We got them vaccinated. But I don't think anybody should be bullied into getting their kids vaccinated. But this then gets into the latter part of it. It's not just the issue of anxiety and spiritualism and neo-paganism and whether or not you have a saving faith and the like. It's also this. There's an increasing movement on the left to consider children wards of the state who are put into the protective care of parents. All of us belong to the state. Now, remember, the Democrats have been making this claim for a while now that children are part of the state. You've had Joy Reid on MSNBC and others on MSNBC saying that actually the kids belong to the state. The parents are just there doing the work of the state. And if the parents cease carrying out the agenda of the state, the kids should be confiscated from the parents. And this comes increasingly at a time where much of the left is upset with the way foster care works because black kids might wind up in a white family. And that's apparently racist. None of it makes any sense. None of it ties together in a rational, coherent way. It's all about expanding the power of the state through an intersectional lens. So I guarantee you that while I think it's your right to or to not get your child vaccinated, the moment the FDA says the vaccine is safe for kids, you will see a movement in this country by progressive politicians demanding you go do it. You will see parents bullied and shamed. And I kind of suspect that's going to overplay the hand. There's actually a lot of polling out right now. And I don't believe the individual polls, but collectively in the polling average, majority of Americans favor a vaccine mandate for employers, but they don't favor a government-imposed mandate. Majority of Americans trust the vaccine. Majority of Americans are frustrated with those who won't get it. And I think the right risks rocking the boat here too much. And clearly the left is trying to push us to rock that boat, hoping it helps them in the midterms. But the moment the vaccine is approved for kids and the left demands with state authority that you go vaccinate your kids, I think they're going to head into grounds they don't see coming because they're convinced everyone agrees with them on this issue. But here's the thing. There's polling out of Iowa. Iowa is a swing state. The president must win the state. The Democrats must win the state. And now the data shows 36% of Iowans, 36% approve of Joe Biden. What is their number one issue? Their number one issue, it's not COVID. Their number one issue, it's not Afghanistan. Their number one issue, incompetence. They believe this administration is incompetent. Number two is Afghanistan. Number three is his handling of the virus. Number one is competence or incompetence. When roughly a third of Iowa voters think Joe Biden is competent, you're not going to get people to go rush out and get their kids a vaccine if they don't think the government is competent. And when the left then comes out and says, like hell, you're going to go get this kid a vaccine or else because your kid is property of the state, you're just raising the kid on behalf of the state. That's not going to go well with people, and people on the left don't even seem to realize it. That's one of the problems. As we head closer and closer to the midterms, there's a growing disconnect between the left and families, in large part because the left increasingly is secular and childless, and they want to make public policy for families. It's not going to go well for them. I'll tell you what's going to go well for you, going to Patriot Mobile. I need to explain something because people keep asking me this question. Why does a company like Patriot Mobile exist? If you're not familiar with Patriot Mobile, they're a cell phone company. They use the towers that the other companies use, so you don't have to worry about your cell signal. You don't have to worry about quality of service. You don't have to worry about data packages. But the thing that sets them apart is they're explicitly Christian and conservative, and they give money to pro-life causes and to Second Amendment causes and to veteran causes and conservative causes. The reason Patriot Mobile exists is because several years ago, the left started doing this. And progressive activists would take their business to a progressive cell phone carrier. I forget the name of the company now. But the profits that the company used were then used to funnel to Planned Parenthood, to unions, to progressive groups that helped get Democrats elected. And conservatives realized, you know, we're behind. Progressives are filling up their war chests. with people choosing to use a progressive-oriented cell phone company that gives their profits to progressive causes. A buddy of mine, actually, and I didn't even realize it was him at first, helped start Patriot Mobile as one of the responses to this, where you can get quality cell phone service with a U.S.-based customer service representative whenever you call, it's U.S.-based, and also the profits from the company go to help conservative causes, to combat the left. So not only are you helping fight back against the left doing this, but you're actually contributing money through their profit sharing to pro-life causes, Second Amendment causes, veteran causes. So you're giving your money to a business that has your back in the way it contributes its money to political causes and the like. I highly recommend Patriot Mobile. I think they would serve you well as a cell phone company. What you do is you go to patriotmobile.com/Eric. That's patriotmobile.com/ERICK. They can port your phone number over. If you've got an unlocked phone, you can use it. You can also call their U.S.-based customer service at 972-PATRIOT. You get free activation with the discount code that happens to be my first name, Eric, E-R-I-C-K. Go to patriotmobile.com/Eric today. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-973-7425. This hour of the program brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. If you are in charge of the finances of business and you need big loans, we're talking six figures and above, you need to reach out to First Liberty Building and Loan, see if they can help you. They make their own decisions. Go to firstlibertyga.com. That's firstlibertyga.com. I have not been to the theater to see the Marvel movie Shang-Chi. I very much wish to go see this movie. Now, a buddy of mine, let me see if I can pull up his email. I want to leave him nameless because I don't have his permission to read it. I know he won't mind me reading it, but yes, this is it. I've heard nothing but glowing, amazing things about this movie. This friend of mine writes, the first 10 to 12 minutes are entirely in Chinese Mandarin with English subtitles. Throughout the movie, there are different scenes in Chinese as well. I've never seen a U.S. movie with so much Chinese dialogue. The villain is Chinese, so maybe that's a negative, but all the heroes are as well, so it balances out. The action moves from San Francisco to Macau. The last 50 to 75% of the movie takes place in an unnamed location in China. Shang-Chi, the hero, was born in China, moved to the U.S. in his teens, goes back to look for his sister and mother. There's a scene where Shang-Chi and his girlfriend are encouraged to recall their original Chinese names. Those names, they are told, tie them to millennia of ancestors and their hopes, dreams, and work. The advice comes from Tony, who's apparently Hong Kong's biggest movie star, Tony Leung, but who's never done a movie outside China before. Don't want to go into details on the shot, but into the plot, but there's a reverence for China, for Chinese warriors, the sacrifices of its people, for its history. It's all Disney could do to make a love affair to China. And the Chinese have banned the movie from being shown in China. If Disney can't placate China, even when using their slave labor, no one can. We might as well give up on trying to placate them.